Hello, everybody. Welcome to South by Southwest Interactive. My name is John Tolva. This panel is called Terraforming the Internet, When 3D Models Meet Business Models. It is being recorded for podcast, so you know, if you have a question at any time, feel free to ask it and I'll repeat it or go up to the mic. The panelists that I have with me today, starting from here, is John D'Alessandro from Mies, Eric Rice, who's been called a media superconductor. I love that. Bill Victor of Halcyon Worlds, and Ben Batstone Cunningham, principal at AltZoom Studios. So thanks for being here. Also, the whole screen burn track is being webcast into Second Life, the Electric Sheep Island, so if you want to do that. But thanks for joining. We're going to talk today about virtual worlds in the broadest sense and business models in the broadest sense, not just how do companies make money, but why it makes sense to do anything that you might call business in or around those virtual worlds. And we've got a diverse panel today. So like I said, feel free to ask anything at any time. We're going to do this discussion style, no visuals really, the irony in a virtual worlds panel. But we want to talk a little bit about, you know, some people consider virtual worlds the logical next step for the web's growth. And, you know, that's a very contentious way to put it. Threatens some people, excites others. But, you know, what I would ask is this more of an evolution? They seem so different, the page-based internet and a spatial internet. But is it more like the evolution of protocols, you know, Gopher to HTTP, or is it really just an appendage, let's say, to the page-based internet? So I'm going to start with that question to my panelists. You know, is this something that the page-based internet will morph into, or will they all always be sort of complements to one another? Eric?
You want to? Okay. Pass it to me. I'm kind of in the middle because I see it not necessary. I don't believe that page models are just going to die exclusively. There is a belief out there, just even prior to virtual worlds getting as much momentum as they have recently. But I think there's also this relationship with gaming that, while not by definition purely gaming, it's kind of in this space between where there's this sense of presence. I certainly appreciate how real time and spatial that a virtual space can be, whether it's a video game, whether it is just kind of a social space for working and so on. I've had more than enough experiences of doing things with other people in real time in a virtual world aspect, where there could be 20,000 people looking at a web page, and you don't really have any kind of camaraderie or any connection with these folks. It's like watching a funny movie with somebody else or watching it by yourself. You might be slightly amused, but the energy of other people around you really mm-hmm. affects the experience. And, you know, we've already kind of been through that and have experienced that in the game world. Mm-hmm. So I think it's probably another path, but definitely I don't think it's a replacement.
In this first part where we're just trying to get our heads around what a virtual world is, I mean, my comment to that would be that there are page-based communities that you could argue, you know, represent the same sort of collaborative space, although that space is, I guess, an internal space or a cognitive space. It's not, you know, physicalized in any way. You know, you might ask, are things like MySpace a virtual world? What differentiates, let's say, you know, There.com and MTV and Second Life from these other very social spaces?
I'm thinking it's that spatial and kind of live and presence. You can see a reaction. When I saw a lot of podcasters show up inside of the Second Life virtual world, a lot, mm-hmm. their tone almost changed a bit because you can interact with these people in real time and do actually a live show where it's very on demand previously.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think
closer to the mic.
Real-time spaces, it's by very nature a collaborative environment where other pages like MySpace and Flickr, YouTube, it's more archival, and it does that very well. And you wouldn't really want to shoehorn that into a virtual space just for the sake of doing so. There's a lot of room in there to have... Sorry, there's a lot of room in there to build that up, but I wouldn't force it.
I think that, you know, there's where there's kind of an interesting thing there is when these MySpaces, these social networks, these other web pages where you know, there's not this presence, are trying to create it for themselves, where they're really emerging towards a virtual world. I mean, you see the you know, online indicator on MySpace. You know, Twitter is a big thing at this conference right now. How are people trying to make those into virtual worlds? I mean, they have little avatar. You know, they have people really communicate in real time. You know, not because they're necessarily designed that way, but because people want to use it that way. They're using it to create that shared experience. You know, in MySpace, you go to you know, your friend's profile, you leave them a comment with a movie, and if they're, you hope they're online. You know, I mean, you do it if they're a little online tag, and if they're online, you know, you expect within the next 30 seconds they're going to get back to you. So, you know, it seems to me like they're trying to get that virtual world experience through MySpace, but you know, it's, I don't know what so. Does that make MySpace a virtual world, or does that just make, you know, virtual worlds something that need to be more like MySpace? I don't know.
I would actually agree and disagree that I think that MySpace and the other social media sites are, in fact, worlds. You know, that's where people are spending their time. They're communicating with each other. They're doing all of these things that you listed. And I think the evolution of these worlds models the evolution of the Internet in general. You know, people who are spending, you know, particularly young people in their 13 to 25, they don't email each other. They spend their time, they communicate with each other via these social media sites, and these are their worlds. I think the next step is the virtual world, and as they become more robust and more easy to navigate and input different types of content information, I don't think they'll displace, but they may be the next step replacing, you know, the social media sites as we know them today.
One of the guys So for my history, I was at Linen Lab for about 4 years before splitting off to start AltZoom, which is just doing content in Second Life, which means I'm doing basically the same thing I was before, but for myself. When I was at Linen Lab, we had an intern there, and he liked to kind of split up the community into two categories. One was an augmentation category. The other one was kind of the emergent category. And his name is... In Second Life, it was Henrik Lindon. I can't remember his real last name, but you Google that and you'll find him. He's got a couple good blog posts about it. But basically, yeah, he's you know, saying, you know, well, a lot of people are looking for these virtual worlds to be augmenting their real world, and in the same way, augmenting the web. So I think that's where it's going to be, you know, the real strength, not, you know, replacing or the next step of, but the augmentation of, you know, the web.
Well, let's talk about that in the context of a business model or doing business, whether for yourself as the principal of a studio, Ben, or, you know, a company or just a DIY enthusiast. It seems like the points of tangency between the page-based internet, for lack of a better word, and 3D worlds, or 2.5D worlds, which is something we want to talk about, is a location, you know, for business of some sort. You know, Bill, maybe you could talk a little bit about, you know, how you see these experiences interpenetrating themselves.
Well, 3D has become synonymous with these kind of virtual worlds.
Into the mic.
3D has become synonymous with these kind of virtual worlds. But you know, the idea is to create an immersive environment. And if you don't identify what the true objective of it is, I think that you can get sort of confused with what might be the best approach. But take music, for example. If you wanted to deliver music in a certain way, you've got your surround sound system at home, you've got a satellite radio in your car, and you've got something portable for your run. Each one delivers it effectively, but you have to make sure that if you're getting into this space that you sort of realize that you may want to have a light footprint, something that is going to be quickly accessible. That's very important to some businesses. If you want to go and enjoy your surround sound system, well, that could be your 3D world. That could be the more immersive environment where you're going to get a lot more out of the experience.
Some of the places that I see the tangency is in user-created content. I mean, the most popular online worlds today are those that make it very low barriers to entry. And of course, that's the one of the strong points about Web 2.0 and that sort of thing. Yet, even just this last week, you know, Sony announces their virtual world called Home to render on the PS3. Not clear, you know, if user-created content is going to be a part of that. But of course, you know, everybody pushes for higher and higher levels of fidelity, higher and higher levels of you know, visual fidelity. And the question I have is, you know, it's so easy to you know, create content today, Twitter and Tumblr and blogs and all that stuff. Yet the push, it seems, in some ways in virtual worlds is sometimes seems to run counter to that. Certainly, we're seeing success in those companies that do give you the tool set. But there's plenty of virtual world platforms, you know, where you've got to import a high-end 3D model and be that skilled to do that. So I wonder what the comments from the panel are on the sort of DIY aspect of it, maybe what we can learn from the web's evolution from a read to a read-write, you know, platform.
You know, I probably learned more about blogging, podcasting, and video blogging from spending time in Second Life and Warcraft simultaneously than I had ever done reading blogs. And part of that was because there is this clear illustration of the difference between a very top-down, we are in control of publishing content, and if you look at Warcraft like that, it's very beautiful, and the sound design, and you know, I love it, it's a great experience. And then you go to a model that is completely DIY, and it's almost, not necessarily the democratization of, but almost like an anarchy of content. You can have something beautiful next to something awful. You know, it's all a matter of taste and such. And, you know, that I think is going to be the big challenge, because that's one of the first criticisms you've heard with, you know, the Sony Home. People that have had the power of absolute control in creating their content are immediately going to look at Sony and say, well, they're not letting us do this. Or, you know, the Kinevas or all of these other worlds that they start small in a little bit more of a polished way. And so I think there's going to be this kind of shakeout in, well, where's this content coming from? Who's making it? I would probably really hate, in a game sense, to have to build all of the World of Warcraft first and then play in it. But I would like a certain amount of freedom to have a common area, have a place I can collaborate. And World of Warcraft's a very collaborative experience, so much that there are people that plan Warcraft activities inside of a virtual world, like Second Life. I could see that happening on the PlayStation. I could see that happening in Kineva or Halcyon or any of these worlds that will exist. So, you know, that's probably one of the hottest issues is, well, who's going to give how much control? And there is that quality issue that's going to come up.
I think it becomes interesting, too, when these virtual worlds become advertising platforms. And when advertisers are entering these worlds and they want to, you know, reach their audience there, they want their brands there, they want to exert some kind of control over their brand. And, you know, at Mies, we have, you know, a walled garden, which some may sneer at. But, you know, we feel we could give a lot of, you know, options for personalization and a lot of opportunities to express, you know, our users express who they are and what they're passionate about. But it's you know, and we also are trying to reach a certain audience. And you know, it's not, you know, it's a little edgy, but not too edgy. The edges we get are tattoos and piercings. And you know, for advertisers, you know, as I'm going out and speaking to them, they're, you know, they have a lot of concern about, you know, what control am I going to have over my brand? And if I bring it into these worlds, although they're entering Second Life in droves, it's with a bit of trepidation. And you know, what we tell them is, it's no different than advertising in the real world. You can sell someone a sweatshirt that has Coca-Cola on it, and they could go rob a bank with it. Does that mean that Coca-Cola endorsed a bank robber? And I feel it's not that different in the virtual world. But you know, as you know, these you know, big advertisers, they're very concerned about controlling their brand and making sure that it's not diluted or damaged or you know, whatever.
Well, so it seems like you're saying that business models in virtual worlds more closely approximate just regular business models or business scenarios, let's say, of liability but also opportunity. So it raises the question then, you know, are there cases where it would be a liability or just it not make sense for a business to be involved in a virtual world?
Well, I don't need to see an accounting firm inside of a virtual world. But there's been car makers and hotel chains. Mm-hmm. There's a Loft Hotel It's, I think, a Starwood hotel that they set up a virtual hotel. It's not been built. You can go in and check it out. That makes sense from a travel, you know, mm-hmm. travel industry's got mm-hmm. this sense. But, yeah. you know,
Ben, accounting. Ben, do you do your taxes in Second Life?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say.
No, you do not.
You come on, accounting firm. You got this microcurrency, right? You got people making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars making avatar skins in Second Life. You know, they're working from home. They don't have infrastructure behind them. Why not an accounting agency? I mean, you get a bunch of people there to, you know, actually just offer, you know, your accountant, you know, do bookkeeping for you. You know, I could see somebody, you know, it might not be a lot of accountants in Second Life. That wouldn't make sense. But get somebody in there to offer that service.
That sounds like a fun group.
I think that, you know, it'd be, I guess if you have such thing as a hip, you know, accountant, Second Life would be a good place for them.
That's kind of also plugging it into something that already exists, but what if you don't have an existing space, meaning a company wants to come in and they want to create their own world, whether it's a 3D world or isometric world. I think they have to identify whether they can bring people. Is their content compelling enough? I think another possible liability is exposing users / customers to potentially obscene language or material. You've got to think about that. And then I think more importantly, there's brand management. A squalid, ridiculed store in a virtual environment can have just the same effect in a real world. You have to make sure...
I'm going
to
tape that microphone to your face.
a squalid, ridiculed store could have the same... In a virtual space, could have the same effect in the real world, meaning you have to realize that it's an extension of your brand. And if you don't protect it, if you don't keep active about it, that could introduce some problems.
So basically you're saying that not only are accountants welcome in Second Life, but also really skilled real estate agents and city planners as well. So I think that, you know...
I actually had gotten the attention of my local redevelopment agency because I don't believe my town's redevelopment agency is doing their job. And so I, like any good blogger, bitch about it. And the husband, who is a podcaster of a woman who's on the board, read this. And we then met up for coffee, and I showed a prototype of the town where Dartmouth University is. And we, like, pedestrianized the entire city. There was a replica of that. And so, yeah, there is actually a civic possibility if you have this kind of freedom and control to do that. And so real estate, I can totally see that coming with the new, with, you know, fly-throughs of mm-hmm. homes instead of the thing. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that this is almost like the same conversations we had when blogs and podcasts and business models and all of that. I mean, advertisers, for example, have these similar concerns when it comes to advertising on a podcast or mm-hmm. in a blog. And, you know, are they buying into networks or are they putting their brands inside of engines like the Google Ads and mm-hmm. such? You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's perfectly all right if we arrive at a point where we're saying there really is nothing new in business models, but there's something that I think there's a line that you cross at some point where there are truly unique things, truly unique opportunities in these virtual worlds. I don't know where that is, and maybe we can suss that out a little bit, but, Ben has previously mentioned the evolution of the land ownership and currency, for instance, in Second Life, and how it sort of... at a certain point, you know, it was a feudal system, moved to, you know, more of a capitalist or consumerist, but then things happen in these worlds, unrestricted copying, for instance, that changes the game utterly, or not the game, but changes the world utterly. I wonder if we could isolate anything that truly is unique or, models for doing business as an individual or as a company that we didn't see in blogging or, you know, web one, web two, that kind of thing. Awkward silence is an answer.
Well, real-time behavior.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think, you know, just, I know you're trying to move away from the advertising model, but I just do have something else
Me
to
personally?
Say. Well, yeah, because, you know, I think, you know, the way we look at it, there's two potential business models with, mm-hmm. with what we do in these worlds. There's advertising, and then there's the sale of virtual items. Those are the two things. And I think, you know, in Second Life and a few others in this country have done a pretty good job of, you know, proving that there is an appetite in this country for buying virtual things. It's huge in Asia, and it's just taking off in this country. And I think we will see more and more of that, you know, that people want to dress their avatars in the same things that they wear in the real world. or not, or things that they would never wear in the real world that they will wear on their avatars. And well, that's one thing. But then I'll talk, I figured someone would disagree.
No, go ahead.
I'd add media to the list. The independent musicians that I've seen performing inside of a place like Second Life, you know, who's to say we can't go kick it in a pub right off of Grand Theft Auto in Liberty City and listen to a local band? Mm-hmm. That's awesome. We haven't been able to do that. I mean, there's streaming internet radio, and you'd maybe catch a webcast of a gig, but a musician actually now can see and interact with fans as, you know, so yeah, I was playing the Xbox 360 circuit. It was great. We knocked them dead. I mean, that's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Beyond the real world physics. So I would add media and things like that to that list in addition
to. Ben, were you?
Yeah, you know, I think that advertising is a really easy one, and all these kind of real world metaphors and Web 1 metaphors are really, you know, handy for us to start thinking about because, you know, they're easy. We understand them. And that's why it's kind of hard to start thinking about what's going to come next. And we don't have that experience yet. Things like, you know, beyond just, you know, selling virtual goods, you know, selling virtual services, going to Second Life and, you know, getting a tour guide, right? That's kind of a cool thing because, Second Life, for instance, is really hard to navigate, really hard to search in. But if you find a native who really knows the area, there's a lot of neat stuff, and you'll start seeing why, you know, it's kind of taking off instead of the usual, well, Jesus, a lot of, frankly, user-created content out here, isn't there? Mm-hmm. I think that, once again, tour guide, that's not something new. That's not a new business model. But, you know, much of Second Life is built around this real-world metaphor, land. These virtual worlds are all very built around these real metaphors.
And you can fly.
Yeah. There you go. As your business of selling jetpacks, right? You know, that's not really a real world business model, I suppose.
But hey, branded jetpacks.
Exactly.
Yahoo jet.
I think that the opportunity for brand extension in virtual worlds is probably better than any kind of advertising that any company could do, because not only are you getting the exposure within the world, if you have the opportunity, users have the opportunity to take these, if they can, you know, take them out of the world and extend them wherever they go online, and this whole viral growth is something that is pretty much almost impossible to replicate in the real world in the same volume and to the same extent.
One of the things you mentioned there is taking things out of the virtual world, and that's very difficult right now, but it gets at the fact that we've all been talking about business opportunities in world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there are business opportunities outside of these worlds too, like doing things like moving, moving your goods, your friends, your look from one place to the other. But you know, maybe we could talk a little bit about the opportunities for the platforms. I mean, and this is I think where we come into contact, which you knew we would, with gaming. You know, which is a totally different business model than the virtual worlds, but they bear so much relation. So I guess the question I would pose is, you know, what are some of the most interesting things that you've seen or heard of outside the virtual worlds, you know, but surrounding that industry? You probably have an interesting story to tell from Mises' perspective.
Right. So, okay, and I was cautioned, I was scolded, we can't, you know, do billboards for our companies, but I will tell you, we have we look at this in a little bit different way, because Mies is actually, we see it as a virtual station, not a virtual world, where our users come to our site, create their avatars, and then we encourage them to export them wherever they go online. And we are, you know, rolling out the ability to take them into various different virtual worlds. But so, you know, our pitch to our advertisers is not only do you get the brand engagement within our site in a very integrated way, we create integrated advertising sponsorships where we create special themed boutiques and virtual items for the advertiser. We promote them. We run contests and promotions to encourage our users to wear these items and then to export them wherever they go online. So, you know, as I said, there's the engagement within the site, and then there's the extension that is, you know, difficult to track, but also potentially enormous. And it's, you know, people are very interested in this. And
I find that very interesting, the ability to have a virtual thing, whether it's your persona or your goods that are transferable around. I think, you know, we're right at the very beginning of seeing that, but you know, things like Eric was talking about, using Second Life as a training platform for World of Warcraft. these kind of, you know, the overlap, you could say, or, you know, I could envision, you know, training services and things like that in these worlds mm-hmm. for doing stuff elsewhere on the web, you know, right. how to put a blog together, but it's, you know, in a Second Life, something like that.
On the issue of exporting, you know, I've kind of taken this virtual identity, which I had to assume just because you needed to assume this identity, and have ended up in some weird place where what I create in a place where I own my IP is being transferred to real-life mediums, two-dimensional artwork. I'd never thought I'd even be thinking about doing an animated series or a graphic novel, but being able to transfer, I have five identities that I've created for the purpose of, you know, this creative story process, because I kind of mm-hmm. come from the studio side of things, making original content, where I've seen an avatar that I made. There's a cafe press for skateboards, which I actually learned about from a retailer that was in a virtual world. Mm-hmm. And so now I can actually use it as almost like a really a social Photoshop or a social Maya or something to then bring it out there. And seeing 2D representations and seeing, you know, we have some alternate reality stuff that's floating around here that comes, that's making the leap out, but also then applying concepts of meta-gilding. You know, who I am in one virtual world actually extends to other spaces and also other games as well. You know, I'm the same on Xbox and EVE Online and SL and apparently Twitter now. Mm-hmm. You know, where my identity is transferring, which that identity was supposed to be a character, and it gets really complex. But now, well, do I have a space that now can accommodate all of this? You know, I don't have a PS3. I'd kind of want to chill out in the Sony home, but I'm definitely an Xbox guy, but there's no virtual world there, so mm-hmm. I've got to... You know, where do I live all over the place? And this goes back to that issue of, you know, social networks, and social network creators are like, oh, our network, social network, and it's about the people. We don't care about the software because our people they're going to exist across all of these worlds. Probably all of my friends on Miis or any of these other systems or avatars, where any places I can have buddies, these buddies existed elsewhere first. Mm-hmm. All of my Nintendo social network on the Wii, there are SLRs and a couple of bloggers. So it's like, well, what difference does it make the platform? Mm-hmm. And so now companies look at, well, what might be relevant for a platform, but also can something come out of that? Can you have those little business cards that people make? You know, they actually tie into Flickr, and now they've tied into Second Life, so you can export mm-hmm. your stuff and mm-hmm. create. There's a lot of people here from SL who they have their avatars and all of their info. You know, they print out their cards mm-hmm. and they're... So they've got like this real-life cool thing yeah. to...
A lot of that overlap or mashup, let's say, seems manual, though. I mean, in that, at least in 3D worlds, there seems to be higher barriers to mashing, let's just say. Mm-hmm. Bill Victor, I know you've got some experience, you know, bringing other elements of the web into a virtual world. You know, but then again, you know, it's a totally... You know, these are custom platforms that are being built. You know, I don't see the level of remixability just yet. A lot of what you talked about, Eric, it was you taking upon yourself to transfer your persona to Twitter and Second Life and Xbox. And,
yeah, I believe software companies will never get along and never actually share. As much as we want everything to be open and connected, mm-hmm. yeah, that's never going to happen.
Yeah, remember SDMI. Yeah.
Something I think that would assist in that is a move towards OpenID as well, where you can actually have a login. An account that works across these worlds. I mean, it's more difficult it's easier to say than be done. But as more people, as more companies adopt OpenID, something like OpenID, I think that will also help cross worlds.
If they adopt it.
If they adopt. Yeah.
And while it's really, I think, kind of, you know, up to the individual to transfer themselves right now, these communities are really, I mean, they. Those are actually transferring. I mean, it's very much an emergent phenomenon, right? But they are transferring. You know, one person goes to a new world or a new space, and then, boom, everybody's there. I mean, you can say that that's not automatic, but it really feels that way. You know, suddenly, you know, everybody I know is on Twitter. Suddenly, I'm on Twitter. You know, maybe there's not a good way for me to click one button in Second Life, to make, you know, Bubica Fairchild in Twitter, but you know, it's with when my community goes there, the cost of switching over becomes that much less. I mean, you brought up the Miis. You know, I love the Nintendo Mii phenomenon in Second Life, which is, you know, we have this IRC channel outside of Second Life. So is that IRC channel part of a virtual world? I don't know. But now the IRC channel has avatars because we all have our Nintendo, you know, little console number in there. And the bot keeps track of these. So when a new person in the IRC channel buys their Nintendo Wii, they go through and add their number to it. Everybody else, you know, trades friends, and then they start trading their Miis around. And, you know, where's that border going? You know, suddenly there's a community of Nintendo Miis that is the same community that exists in Second Life. And I don't know, it just seems like it's actually a very easy transfer on that part, and probably the most valuable thing to transfer. I mean, I know you're trying to lead the question to, you know, how do we export content? What happens there? Is there going to be an open standard so that, you know, I can make my building in Second Life the same as my building in, in a Sony Home? But, you know, what you really, what I'm really hearing is, at least, is I don't care so much about that as I care that, you know, my friend in Second Life is the same as my friend in Sony Home. And, you know, is there going to be an easy way for me to make sure that those connections transfer over?
Yeah, there's a lot of criticism about this freestyle model, and one of the things that just always blows my mind is when I hear people, particularly from the gaming space, bring up the issue of you're buying fake clothes for your fake home, for your fake living room, you know, while they're commanding a battle mech in Battlefield 2142 on the Xbox. The other point is that I think there's all these emergent markets that are going to show up, because one of the reasons why, probably about 2 years ago, roughly, or a year and a half, when I saw SL, I saw that it was exactly the same thing as blogging, where the gaming industry is this closed-off, walled, formulaic, you have no say in the matter, this is the game. You pay me $60, and you like it, or don't, and they'll go trade it back to somebody else. And now these worlds are enabling us, some of them more than others, to disrupt and possibly enter into a space. I haven't done 3D stuff in like 17 years. Mm-hmm. I'm like, now it's on my radar, which mm-hmm. is really surreal. Mm-hmm. That gaming industry might be challenged, and anybody that really focuses on, I hate the term, but we know what we're talking about when we say it, that user-generated model is now able to move it to yet another thing, like blogs and in podcasts mm-hmm. and in video blogs, now 3D. As then we go on to the future, you know, it's like the mobile phone industry next, like next year's panel or something. But, you know, we've got that opportunity of the same types of services and opportunities and extensions, because I think all companies essentially are media companies. They can always create a collectible item. They can always create a service type mm-hmm. thing. Question?
Yeah, I had it. And then when you said all companies are media companies, it sort of threw me for a loop.
Right.
It could be.
Yeah.
Not an absolute.
Well, you know, just picking up on what Ben said about, you know, the communities. You know, we have this quote from some of the focus groups we did with high school students about, you know, what is it that, you know, just testing out Miis. And this quote that came back was fabulous. They said, you know, well, I want to be different, just like all my friends. Right? And so it's like, they, you know, so, and then they also said, you know, when we're doing our focus, I think Miis is cool, but I don't know if I would use it. But if all my friends were using it, then I would. And so you think, we kind of laugh and we're like, haha, teenagers. And then we realize that we're all the same. And advertisers are the same. We're all a bunch of lemmings. And, you know, we want to be...
You mean the three guys sitting on the panel with black shirts right now?
There you go.
Exactly. Yeah. We didn't get the memo.
Yeah. Unique here.
So, you know, but it's true. It's like, so I think that's right. What it's all about is community. And it's, you know, people want to be where their peers are, where their friends are. And that's, you know, this sort of emergence of these social media sites, you know, that have taken off. And then the niche ones, like, you know, LinkedIn for professionals, Dogster and Catster, whatever. It's a really interesting phenomenon that people want to be where people like them are. Mm-hmm. And advertisers want to, and people do, and I think these virtual worlds or virtual environments, I think, you know, Ben is right. It doesn't matter so much what the technology is or this and that, as long as people are there.
The easy tool will win, though. I certainly, right. Having been inside of the Kineva 3D world, I can't wait to do or attend or conduct a training session in some of their conference rooms. Very easy, no learning curve at all. Show up, sit down, you're done. You know, that's a lot easier than doing it in an SL. You know, so you know, there's this whole training thing, the education. Industry.
And then it morphs. Like, you know, I worked at AOL from 1995 until early 2000. And, you know, it was interesting. AOL, you know, was it in 95. And then a few years later, it became not cool, but sort of the internet on training wheels. And, you know, we now have with Second Life, you know, pretty early adopter crowd. And it's the thing now. And it's leading the market and creating a model. You know, it's creating an industry, if you will. And so it'll be interesting to see as the technology changes and access gets faster and everything else, what will the next thing be? And will Second Life just get bigger and bigger, or will it be the next new thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, that, Lisa, you know, business models for companies, you know, there is the AOL style, you know, or you might call it, say, Second Life style. But then there's the more, you know, Netscape application server, where you run instances of the virtual worlds. And, you know, we're only just starting to see that. I think there's what this pushes up against is gaming, because I wonder, and I posed to my panelists, is there any useful distinction these days between, you know, solely social spaces, MMOs, and games? Since we see one doing the other, I mean, there are social places in World of Warcraft where you're not raiding anything, and there are full on games in Second Life. Mm-hmm. So maybe we could talk about gaming for a little bit. That is a very different business model than the social business worlds that we see, or social virtual worlds that we see. Are the lessons to be learned, you know, from the gaming industry? You know, where do you see that heading?
I don't think it's all that different. Yeah, I mean, when you start looking at World of Warcraft, you know, why is World of Warcraft, you know, so popular? It's not because it's, you know, a great game. I mean, it's a pretty good game, but it's because there's, you know, a lot of people on there. There's a lot of people building communities in there. And, you know, those communities really support the gameplay. You know, you don't think so at first, you know, going through as a, you know, low-level noob. You don't really talk to too many people, but what really kind of ties you into World of Warcraft, it ties you into that, you know, $15 a month business model is, you know, getting to know other people. And that's going to be, you know, what's going to keep you paying money for Second Life. You want to pay that money to support your role in the community. You want to pay it to, you know, kind of grow your community. And continue participating in it. So, you know, I mean, you could say, well, you know, $15 a month subscription fee versus, you know, buying a private island versus, you know, well, you know, one-time sign-up fee or, you know, buying microcurrency or micro-content, you know, as a shirt. You know, which of those is, you know, right? It's not any of those. I mean, all those go towards the same thing, which is, you know, how do we keep people together? And because that's going to be where the money's made. Mm-hmm. It's going to be, you know, if we can get as many people in one place and make it all continue to work all the time, there you go.
So facilitating a critical mass of human beings.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And where there are a lot of people, there's a lot of revenue opportunities. There's where the people are, there are going to be advertisers. Where the people are, there's retail opportunities. I think that's actually right. And the in-game advertising model is exactly the same as the, you know, virtual world, you know, it's, you know, it's product placement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and Google just bought an in-game advertising company for $23 million. They are about indexing and data and, you know, blogging user-created stuff, and they have a 3D content creation tool, and they have an Earth engine. It's coming. Can you imagine?
I don't have avatars yet.
Well, yeah, I mean, but then again, that's, we kind of figured, you know, that's
we'll
everybody's going to make
we'll
an
watch
avatar.
Until they buy Mies, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, hey, exclusive.
Thanks for the idea.
The you know, Blizzard Entertainment just came out with this thing called the Armory for Warcraft players, which is like this total shiny Ajax-y access to data of players in game, players in your guild, massive community. The guild I'm in Warcraft is like 380 people strong. It's a very tight, tight group. Can you imagine a social space? Because there's this functional workflow that needs to happen when you're doing the end game. And once you hit level 70, and then there's these these dungeons you have to play with 30 other people, there's planning. You know, you listen to these voice servers, things like TeamSpeak or Ventrilo, and you hear people collaborating in real time. There's no room for mistakes, or the whole thing goes. Can you imagine just this very wide open, free form place where you pop out of? You know, this.
Yeah.
We talked about this, I think, last night, where there's back alleys with these open spaces where they can you can be immersed a little bit more. But I can't set my home there. I can't make it mine. I would like to make it mine. I would like to res an instance of a pointless but very useful social space that I don't have to do anything except down and concentrate and talk with. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to talk to another guy who's the same level as me and figure out maybe what I'm doing wrong without having to worry about a tiger jumping me from behind, you know? And I got to go find some far-off place, go float in the water or someplace.
I worry about that in the real world.
Yeah, I know.
There's tigers in Chicago.
I think one of the things you got at are the interesting ways that people have to learn to organize and behave in the world, how they have to be a team. You know, and this is something we see all the time in Warcraft. But there's an opportunity, it seems to me, there, not in selling goods, not in facilitating interaction, but in learning, you know, what the interactions in these worlds, you know, can teach us about human interaction, human styles of self-organization. I know, you know, there are companies, HR departments, for instance, that are interested in what's happening in these worlds for what it teaches them about the nature of teamwork and things like that. So, you know, that could be an area for a business opportunity, let's say.
I think when we get 20 minutes, should we look at a question?
We're going to take some questions. One thing that I need to remind you, though, is that daylight savings time is 3 a.m. tonight. So at 2 a.m., your clocks become 3 a.m. Please don't forget. Or those 10 a.m. panels will be no fun at all tomorrow morning. So let's take questions from the audience. You can either ask and I'll repeat, or you can do so at the mic.
And by the way, for anybody that was following or having conversations on Twitter, I think the web's down, but IRC is up. So we're kind of looking at IRC for questions, but not Twitter.
Yeah, my name's Jim with a company called Cyber Strategies in Washington, D.C. area. I've been on the net a long time, too, since the mid-90s and all that. I've been following Second Life since about early October, and I think it's really great. I'm getting a slightly now used to it, and it's becoming less of a wow factor than it was. I also see there's about 4.5 million people now that have signed up, but still only top concurrent users like 35,000. My question is, as this becomes the wow factor goes and all that, is this going to continue to have legs, and I guess will it morph and things of that nature? And also, I appreciate Mr. Batstone Cunningham's thing about everybody's now going to Twitter and this and that. That's great, but it's also a little disruptive to some extent as well. And myself, I'm not a teenager anymore. So anyway, I think people do need a little bit of stability versus switching around and things like that. So anyway, that's my comment. I appreciate your guys' response. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to talk to does SL have legs? Because you know, being at Linden Lab for a while, you know, this is and just until about last month is when I left, and we're getting all the Valleywag stuff from Clay Shirky, and that was a lot of fun to read. You know, I was at Linden Lab from launch until last month. Launch was in 2003. We had 1,000 users. You know, something like 200 concurrency. And over the last 3 years, it's just been growing steadily. Now, for those who are watching kind of Second Life and how it works, there's a cycle. It goes, you know, build content, build community. The community builds content, content builds community. It keeps going like that. And the more content that gets built, the more community there is. It just keeps on going. With the attention that Second Life's getting right now, there is a lot of people coming in and doing the wow factor, saying, wow, this is awesome. A lot of people bringing in these, you know, big name companies. And those guys are all building content. What that is doing is bringing in more people. More people builds more community. More community builds more content, brings in more retailers. So, you know, it's a very network effect kind of thing. So I think that Second Life, you know, at least, you know, looking for the near future, definitely has legs. whether Second Life's going to be it in 5 years, you know, the metaverse or whatever you want to call it. You know, I can't answer that, but what I think it's going to be is something that involves, you know, what Second Life is currently at. What I mean by that, you know, you kind of start addressing the second question there is, you know, well, you know, I like a little stability, like to have everything in one place. You know, what happens when Second Life and Twitter combine? What happens when these social networks, you know, start really? What happens when Google buys us all and, you know, puts us all together?
God,
that's when it starts getting really interesting. Yeah. So, you know, then suddenly, then we're seeing what really has legs, right? It's going to be where the people are, and it's going to be where these communities feel the most comfortable, and where they can create their content, and you know that. Then you know, so Second Life might be not be it, but I think that it's going to be very much, you know, one of the legs of the, you know, foundation that this thing that we are looking forward to, you know, is built upon.
You know, I just want to comment to you. I think that the switching, I agree that it would be wonderful to have more stability in all of our lives in every facet, real and virtual, but I think the switching around is inevitable. We live in a different world. You know, our fathers and grandfathers worked for the same company, IBM maybe, for their entire careers, and that's not the way people live today. And I think, you know, the lessons from MySpace are really interesting to look at, because, you know, MySpace didn't start out as, you know, as a way for people to connect about GarageBand. And they listened to their consumers, they watched what people were using their service for, and then they embraced that. And that's one of the things that helped them catapult into who they are today. And I think that's the important thing for businesses, to watch who's using it, listen to them, give them what they want, and then maybe you will be one of the ones who lasts or luckily gets bought by Google. You
know? And back to your question about, is it going to have legs? I think that when you start to identify that some of these social networking groups that are out there, they're so large, and they're not really being tapped into to have a collaborative space of their own in real time. When you apply those kind of numbers to a potential virtual world, you're going to see something very interesting. It'll come down to who's interested in it and what kind of content's being presented there. But I think that between that and other businesses who are interested in creating their own presence, you're going to probably see a lot of growth. What you were saying, whether it's going to be Second Life as the dominant force, I think there's still room for a lot of other players.
Thanks for your question. Yeah?
Well, I think to your comment that OpenID is the way that all the little guys can play together, and you don't have to get bought up by Google to have integrated presence across communities now. Like, that's really possible. So, I mean, my question is, part of it is, when is Second Life going to adopt OpenID? But I think, which you can answer, hopefully, I also think that there's way too much hype around Second Life. Usability sucks. I gave up on it when they lost my password. I had to call them. They were making me download a new client every friggin' week. Like, excuse me? It's just like, this is way too much work to wander around in some, like, bizarre world. And I can't find anybody I know because there's no integrated presence across my universe of people. And quite frankly, you know, I'm 30 now, and I work with people between, you know, in the 20-year age range above me, and no, they're not all going to move around. Mm-hmm. They're all just starting to maybe use IM.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
I can't stand meetings. I can't stand meetings in SL. I've had, you know, conferences and stuff. I'm like, God, can we just use the phone already? I mean, I don't need to sit in this luxurious virtual leather chair. And yeah, I mean, but everybody's rushing to do things or rushing to be first. And yeah, the experience is awful. You've got to go in with somebody that you know. And this is one of the things that raises all the red flags for me is, well, look what happens when no one's in control. That's where democracy of something becomes anarchy of something. Mm-hmm. Because there is some epic stuff. I know some amazingly smart people that see the first weird thing and they're like, I don't get it. This is weird. I got a bottle stuck in my ear. Screw this. I'm like, are you, you know, have you been to NASA or seen what the National, you know, Oceanographic people are? You know, gaming is always, you know, it's all kid stuff until, like, you know, the Army and, you know, educational institutions use it, and science, simulation. You know, I made a solar system by accident because I had ADD one day. I was trying to make a sign. And then I started digging and finding, wow, there's people using this astronomical applications, and people are exploring physics and stuff. But, yeah, because there's one company that's made an interface, and no one's taken a hand. There's no one in control. This is where I actually start to appreciate some top-down guidance. You know, I don't get lost in Warcraft. I don't get lost on the Xbox. I don't get lost with my iPod. These aren't things that have technical barriers, and they're very controlled, and then everything else is like chaos. So it's that's where my view has changed a lot to go, well, maybe I don't want absolute DIY.
Well, just something to plant. I mean, it's a great comment, and I think I would personally agree with many of the things you said about the usability, but I see that as a huge opportunity, and you might argue that that's why they open source the client, right? Which is to step away from what Eric is saying, the top down, and just say, you know, we've got this community of users that have literally created a world in here. Maybe they can do the same thing to ill or for benefit to the client itself.
But, you know, I actually agree with you, but I don't want to trash Second Life because I think that they have opened up a market, and I think it's a pretty early adopter crowd. It's difficult. I personally can't navigate it. I'm in this business and I can't handle it. I'm too busy and I don't have time and, you know, whatever, but I do think that they've opened a market, and there things are going to be growing out of that, both within Second Life and outside of Second Life. People are going to be doing it in a different way, providing different tools, and trying to reach a different audience. So it's just the beginning.
Rex?
Hey, Rex Hammock, thank you. Let me, just before I ask my question, just say Mimi Ito and the MacArthur Foundation are doing a lot of great research and study on the whole issue of digital natives versus digital immigrants, and this whole issue of how younger people, not necessarily younger, just people who feel comfortable with technology and it's native to them, aren't so messed up by metaphors that we try to bring online and try to apply online. So it makes it sort of easy to view the web as something live rather than pages or something. But my question is more related to one of the things I find about, and this term page-based internet is new to me, but the collaborative spaces like wikis and others that businesses are now using is the asynchronous nature of them. I don't like meetings, and I don't like live things, and I like being able to kind of come and go and build things. Eric, I know that You've mentioned that you like the live nature of being with concerts, but you don't like the live nature of being in meetings or whatever online. How do you...
Well, in the SL construct of having to go through all of those hoops to have a meeting.
Well, my question is, in terms, and we're talking about business and some of the applications of virtual worlds, which are very exciting to me, but how do you avoid that whole thing? I don't want to show up at a specific time for a specific thing, and maybe I just don't understand.
It's that fine line between this was a big thing with podcasting was appointment based viewing. You know, it's a TiVo world. We want our media when we want it. But then there are those things that we all share a big collective experience with, the Super Bowl, New Year's Eve, you know, now holidays, things where everything, you know, well, look at how many people are here, right? A lot of the blog buzz and Twitter buzz and everything. We're here. There's 9,000 of us. This is event-based. This is an appointment-based event. So it's kind of this really fine line of where is it, you know, you have to have a meeting. It's kind of got to be like now, with even if it's like with three people. It's just how much of a barrier is there to have to do that? And that's the thing that, you know, I think it can get taken too far, and I'll start going back to the skeptic thing of, I don't really need to sit at this table, you know, in your conference room to do it. But everybody really loves the conference rooms and their tables. I mean, because I think, again, and this is an identity thing where you can have something that's yours, and it's like, this is our space, this is our headquarters. And it's really important to a lot of people. And I think, you know, the buddy icon, the avatar thing, we've had buddy icons forever. We've had, you know, we brand ourselves in a certain way. I think that just companies are extending it in the same way, almost like why a company might blog. You know, they want people to touch, and, you know, I can't really touch my customers with a blog. Yeah.
It's an interesting distinction, and might serve as a question that a business asks themselves. Can I do my business asynchronously, or do I need live interaction? You know, and decide from there the resources they put at each.
I also think that you need to, for those reasons you brought up, you need to build in ways of leaving things for people leaving behind things for people that can't make it at a certain point. Whether that's some sort of area where you're leaving notes or media, but you can't get everybody together at one time always. So it's the burden is on developers to create very easy tools so that people who can't be organized can just check in, see what was there, what happened, and maybe leave something behind for them, just the way you would on a blog, just the way
That's a great new panel topic, actually, the persistence or lack thereof of architecture and things in virtual worlds. But got time for one more question, Charles?
But also across the world, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like in the web social networking space that the more open a network, just to take a generalization between like MySpace and Facebook, that the more open something is, the more companies try and take advantage of it and they maybe get commercialized and stuff like that. So with Second Life and with other examples, I mean, how do you prevent, or do we want to prevent a Starbucks on every corner? Because that's what our real life is like, but is that a desirable outcome in a social world?
The community will do it. You don't underestimate how strong they are. I mean, anybody who's blogged about Second Life has met our community. And if it's in a negative sense, they realize just how, you know, how much Kool-Aid there is there. Back in the days when the first advertising kind of branding firm came into Second Life, oh, man, those poor guys, they got chewed apart. There was forum posts for weeks, you know, people picketing their location in Second Life until they started to really learn how to work with the community, how to, you know, stop saying, oh, we're going to make your world better, and start saying, you know, how can you make our world better with us? You know, how can we participate in this world and, you know, create a better place with you instead of, you know, trying to take your world over? I think that, yeah, basically the community will, you know,
I think it's also another reason for some businesses to think about creating their own virtual space, more like a walled garden. A company that comes to mind is Gans. They make teddy bears and things like that, and they have a product tie-in with their space where you buy the product, there's a code on it. That code enters in your presence into the space, and that's now your avatar, so to speak. And there's a few other companies that are working on this. I just think that if you're going to recognize that sometimes your particular business either won't be welcome or will be put next to something that the company owners would rather not be next to, it makes sense to make your own separate entity.
One of the things about the community feedback, I just have been fascinated watching, you know, Linden Labs started blogging as a company, and they're using WordPress, and they, on some days, can trump every single WordPress blog because they will post something and the community is pissed off. And, I mean, 1,000 comments that all got generated within a period of 2 hours. I mean, it is nuts. And, yeah, anybody that's written about SL and said something. I come from the blogging side before SL. And, I'm highly pissed off at Clay Shirky, and I'm taking him to task on the fact that stop crunching numbers and talk about the social implications of it. And so I'm pissed at him for a whole other reason, and there's an entire army of SLers that jump on him, and other economists that they harp on like a piece of data that actually the community doesn't even care about. They like care about concurrency, not so what if there's 4 million people. 35,000 people are online right now. I can't do anything. We don't care if there's 80 million people right now is what the problem is, and they'll come out in droves, and they're starting to cross over in the worlds where the bloggers are coming in and the SLers are getting in the blogosphere, and even some of the most vocal pundits don't have as much punch with their voice. But they're having more punch because there's like an army of pundits or defenders, respectively.
Well, we're out of time. Thanks for spending an hour with us. Don't forget Daylight Savings Time tonight. And thanks to my panelists.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Save it.